Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Thanks for joining today. I have Jeff Murphy sitting down with us all the way from Canada, and we're going to have a chat today a bit about him and his role as a flight paramedic over there, as well as talking about pharmacology and some tips and tricks and his passion for that as well. So Jeff, I'll let you introduce yourself because obviously a the expert of your own experience. So please introduce yourself and thank you for joining.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the you guys taking the time. I am a critical care paramedic in Canada. I work in a province called Alberta, in Northern Alberta. And so we work a lot of smaller communities, working with a lot of nursing stations and working kind of in an ICU type of capacity, as opposed to a emergency type of capacity that most ambulances would work in. And so basically the idea of our job is to use a small airplane, a King Air 200, and fly up to these small areas that helicopters can't reach, ambulances typically can't reach, and get them down to larger hospitals, larger areas where they can get definitive care. And so that's, in a nutshell, what my job is as a critical care flight paramedic in Alberta.
That sounds really exciting and incredibly interesting. So what are, I guess, some of the unique challenges of working in that environment, I guess, too, that Canada can be incredibly cold compared to that of Australia? So does that prove to be a bit of a challenge?
It can. The winters can be really difficult for a few different reasons. A lot of those smaller areas up north, they don't have the logistics. They don't have full-on ambulances. And so a lot of them are SUVs that have been kind of rigged properly for to have a stretcher. And so sometimes the ceiling is super low, so you're crunched over your patient trying to get things done. In some circumstances, the cold really plays with our IV lines. And so if we are running fluids or more seriously running any type of medications through infusions, we have to be really, really careful with those, because even the time it takes to get from the ambulance to the plane, we're outside, we don't get the benefit of a hangar, and it takes less than a couple minutes before our IV lines will freeze up. And so we have to be really, really careful with that, buy special equipment to warm those if you're lucky enough to be able to get on those. But yeah, you have to be really careful, thinking really far ahead. And those, yeah, being in a cold environment can definitely be really tricky, because there's things that happen that you just wouldn't expect in other environments.
Yeah, that's definitely something we don't have to consider over here in Australia, is our lines freezing up. So that definitely would prove to be a challenge. Now, you said that you go towards more like an ICU-based sort of pre-hospital care, I guess, with your medications and the way you do things. Now, you have a bit of a passion for pharmacology, and I just wanted to touch on that before we get into a bit about that pharmacology side of things. So what sort mm-hmm. of, you know, really built your interest in the pharmacology side of things?
I think when I first started this job, I started noticing that when you're doing this job, we're not with our patients for 45 minutes, half hour. There are patients for sometimes upwards of 8 hours, in some cases 10 hours. And so it's a long period of time where starting a medication, it's not like in half an hour, someone recognizes they don't want to do that anymore, and then they can shut it off because of some pathology that's going on, and it doesn't hurt the patient. But when you're dealing with someone that for over a long period of time, for 8 hours, 6 hours, whatever the case may be, the decisions that you make in hour one can heavily impact how the patient is going to, their outcome is going to be 6-7 hours down the road. And so that's where my real passion with pharmacology came into play, because we're no longer thinking half an hour ahead. We're thinking far into the future of what this patient's going to be doing after they get to the hospital. And we want to maximize their outcome by making sure we make the right decisions early, so that way they can, instead of restart or switch the treatments, they can continue on or, you know, tweak those treatments, so that way that patient isn't having such massive changes in the treatments that they're having 8 hours after they get to the next level of care. And so that's where that real passion came from, and really enjoying kind of thinking that far ahead, which creates this really interesting thought of physiology and what's going to happen to your patient, not just now, but that further into the future, and how you can make sure that they get the best chance of success and survival.
That's really interesting. And I guess too, it's that sort of advocating for your patients in a way of, you know, you want to improve them in the future rather than just what you do in the next half an hour. Now, you mentioned so that thinking long-term, and not only, I guess, does that apply to pharmacology, but do you think that's important across the board for everything you do in the pre-hospital environment?
For sure. And thinking long-term, I think, is a great way of thinking for the paramedic professional. When we're working in Canada, we have longer healthcare pay kind of situations where we're working with patients for long periods of time. Start seeing paramedics interacting and being with their patients for longer than half an hour, even in urban settings. And so I believe that as we continue to progress and continue to become this healthcare professional all over the world, not just in places like Canada, Australia, but also in the United States and those kind of places, we're going to see that where paramedics are going to be relied on more often and depended on to make those types of decisions that not just impact their patients for within half an hour, but impact their patients when they get to the emerge bed, impact the patient when they get to the ICU, if that's the route that they're going. And so I do believe that our knowledge of pharmacology and our knowledge of pathophysiology and understanding what's going on inside of a patient is critical as we progress to be more relied upon by physicians and by hospitals to have better outcomes for our patients.
Definitely. And I guess there too, like you're talking about knowing your medications, knowing your patient, knowing the pathophysiology. What I guess are your sort of tips that you teach your students at the beginning of their sort of careers whilst they're still studying? How do they best set themselves up for success to start thinking long term and to really start understanding the pathophysiology and the pharmacology?
For sure. I love that. So the biggest things that I talk with my students about is when we get an assessment, talk about this patient and get an idea of kind of where they're at and how sick they are, then we start talking about what we're going to do for treatment. So for example, if a patient that we're looking at doing a intubating and sedating, and we're going to sedate them long-term. And if, for example, it's a patient that is borderline hypotensive, maybe we don't want to make them any more hypotensive, or even a septic patient. And those types of patients that we're talking about where we'll use sepsis as an example, where let's say we're intubating and sedating that patient. And then the conversation we'll have is, okay, what sedation and what analgesia should we use for this patient? And there's a lot of conversation about using some fentanyl Versed, and a lot of people will jump on ketamine as well for those types of things, which is a fantastic conversation to have. However, there's a lot of pathophysiology that's going on with sepsis, specifically the tachycardias that come with sepsis, and using things like ketamine that can increase heart rates, increase that catecholamine release, can ultimately precipitate to worse problems down the road. And the same conversation can be had with even vasopressors as well, where we're trying to move away from things like dopamine and look more at using things like norepinephrine. And that's another conversation that I like to have with my students of which one is better for that particular situation. And usually they're picking the norepinephrine because that's kind of the trend that's going right now, which is the right answer. And we start talking about the pathophysiology of why. And the true answer is that we don't want to increase that tachycardia, decreasing the fill time of the heart. And so really when I'm talking about talking with my critical care students and those students that have an advanced understanding is that we just kind of work through and making sure that they understand that their pathophysiology and the decisions that they make with the drugs from that pathophysiology can alter that patient and make things worse if we're not careful. And I think this, we have this preconceived notion in paramedicine is that because we see a patient for such a short period of time that our treatments don't impact the patient too much, but it's just not the case. It's just not the case. And that's the lesson that I try and teach those students is understanding that when you're choosing your drugs, you need to be thinking about the pathophysiology and what you're going to change with that patient. And is it going to be a good change or is it going to be a bad change? And making sure that they have those relatively simple questions to ask themselves so that way they don't put themselves in bad situations. So new practitioners truly is just simply asking that question is when you're making a decision and you say, I want to use norepinephrine or I want to use epinephrine, then just immediately ask that question like, okay, using that, what's going to happen to my patient's vital signs? What's going to happen to my patient's pathophysiology? Is it a positive change or is it a negative change? And then you can make an educated decision based on that simple question for yourself.
That's really interesting. I really love that. And I was actually only talking to a nurse practitioner recently about pharmacology, and in particular, we were talking about that thinking long term, but that risk versus benefit analysis. So understanding, what you just said there, what's this drug going to do to my patient? Like, how's it going to change their vital signs, etc. But he was mentioning that, you look at all your drugs and the side effects that could occur with those and start thinking about, before you're giving it, how can I fix those if they were to occur? And would that, if I couldn't fix it, would that impact giving this drug to this particular patient? And I thought that was a really interesting perspective to start thinking about quite early on.
That's it. I love that because it really plays into a patient that I had recently. A COVID patient in particular, they were kind of borderline hypotensive. We were trying to use propofol as one of our sedatives in order to manage them. And propofol ultimately does cause vasodilation and causes hypotension. And so to answer the question, like what's the risk benefit and can I correct the risks? And that was exactly what we did is that we used propofol because it's a great sedative agent, but it caused hypotension. And so we added norepinephrine to that patient in order to combat that side effect of that drug. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's a fantastic way of looking at it is what the risk benefits and can I live with the risks or can I correct the risks? And that's a great way to think at it.
Awesome. So even then, just thinking too, you said it from your basic drugs like morphine, fentanyl, how can you fix any of those side effects? Or, but then also thinking about we don't have as our qualified normal paramedics, we don't have propofol or ketamine and things like that. But I guess it'd be good to make students more aware of what our sort of critical care paramedics hold so that, if they do find themselves in a bit of a doozy with a sort of patient and can't do anything with what they've got, it's important to know what critical care paramedics have got, I guess, so that you can always ask for that help.
Mm-hmm. Even things like nitro. And what do you call nitro over in Australia there? Nitroglycerin. There's another name for it, isn't there?
GTN.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay. So, and even with those types of drugs and thinking about what you need to correct that, like if you give that and cause hypotension, because we know that hypotension can occur with that, it's can you make a decision based on is the risk worth it in that situation? Is your patient hypotensive or hypertensive? And making that evaluation, even with, like you said, those basic medications that we use on a fairly regular basis, is it worth giving nitroglycerin to a patient that has a blood pressure of 105 when they're kind of on that cusp of, is it really going to benefit the patient to take that risk? of causing hypotension? And if I do cause hypotension, can I correct it? And hopefully the answer is yes, by giving fluids. And it's the same, yeah, it's the same thought process regardless of what you're using, for sure.
Absolutely. And so I wanted to get a bit of your take as well on, and you mentioned this before, but like doing multimodal analgesia. So, you know, for us over in Australia, you know, it could include your paracetamol and then your fentanyl, maybe even methoxy, depending on what the patient is presenting like, but using multiple steps in that sort of analgesia ladder.
Yeah, like the biggest things with those kind of thing, I like to use different stacks when it comes to analgesia, like fentanyl, propofol, or fentanyl Versed is a very common combination for me. I also reach for ketamine a lot, and for analgesic purposes, but also for, it has some sedative purposes. You want to add something typically on top of it to really take it. But when it comes to those kind of things, regardless of what medication you're using, now we use different medications in Canada than what you guys do, but the principles of how you want to use it is the same, is what's the level of consciousness of your patient, and or do you have control, is really the best question that I typically ask for those patients. And if the answer is yes, that means that you have then you have enough on board. If the answer is no, then you need to look at either increasing the drug dosages or adding something on top. And that's it, using those simple types of questions. And when I say, do you have control? Is your patient moving? Is your patient still complaining of pain? Do you have any type of tachycardia that is associated with that pain or that anxiety? Those are the kind of things that you're looking at as far as if you have control. And if you're talking about just about pain, then that's great. You can use the pain scale. You can use the emotions of your patient to determine that, as well as the heart rate. But if you have a patient that's not exactly has a sound mind, if they're altered, then we can start using things like the heart rate itself. If you've intubated this patient and you're using things like that, then again, you can look at the heart rate. You can look at their movements while they're intubated, their ability to ventilate. And again, it all comes back down, do I have control? Yes, perfect. Then we can continue on. If we don't, then we need to take a step back, like, okay, what can I do in order to gain control back? And that is either increase your drugs or add something else to supplement it.
Awesome. That's a really good takeaway. I really like that. Do you have control? I'll be remembering that one for sure. So going from there, good. I guess we'll go more towards that student perspective and sort of, I guess, your tips and tricks. We've already gone through one in terms of understanding the pathophysiology and the pharmacology when making decisions about what medications you're going to give, but what sort of tips and tricks do you have for students when one learning about medications and utilizing those?
For sure. So I'm sure it's the same in Australia, where you're kind of just slammed with this list of medications that you need to learn, and it's not short. so we kind of get overwhelmed with it, and usually the advice that I give in those situations is to take it one drug at a time, or more specifically, actually one class at a time is probably the best place to start, because the majority of our drugs, typically we have two or three per class that we carry. For example, two or three beta blockers, two or three analgesics, two or three sedatives. And usually they're of the same class, and the difference between them is either the route that we give it in, or the duration it lasts. And so you can learn a lot about the mechanism of every one of these drugs just by simply looking at the class. So you're not just individually looking at each individual drug. So that would be the first part, is just kind of taking all those medications and then bundling them in each individual class. So that way you can look at it from more of a bigger perspective. The second thing is, I always say when you're trying to study specifically drugs, is to not memorize them. I understand in school, we're kind of in a test format where we're trying to, where you kind of have to memorize certain things. But in truth, when you get into the field and you're working as a paramedic, you very rarely are going to recall those memorized little details. And so when it comes to school, I try and have a student focus on the understanding of how that drug works, as opposed to memorizing all the minute details. So for example, if you understand, we'll take nitroglycerin as an example of that. If you understand that how nitroglycerin works and converting nitric oxide into or nitroglycerin into nitric oxide to cause vasodilation, and you know that mechanism, then you know a good majority of the side effects that it would occur if you understand the mechanism. And if you understand the mechanism, then you have a pretty good idea of what those contraindications are going to be, because you know if it's causing vasodilation, then it's probably going to cause a drop in blood pressure, contraindication being hypotension. And so that's really the biggest place to start, is just instead of trying to memorize all the little details, is really try to understand what those drugs are doing in the body. And once you get that, then the side effects become less about memorization and more about you know them because you understand how that drug works in the body. So that's the first part, is just stop worrying about memorizing from flashcards and just start understanding how those drugs actually work. Next thing for students that I always say is don't study for as long as you are. Students typically go on these binges for hours and hours at a time. I know I did when I was in paramedic school. It was a long time ago, but I don't think that thought of I need to study for 4 hours straight to get past this test, I don't think that mentality has really changed much over the years. So you're in school as well. Like, what is your study habits like?
Try to minimize how much study I do in one day, but when you lead up to exams, it's quite a full day of study just to make sure that you're okay for the exam.
Yeah, and it's tough, especially when you have so much coming at you. And I think we get this idea as a student is that if I study for longer, then I will do better on that exam. And you can study for 4 hours, but the key is that you need to take breaks. And so if you have a 4 hour chunk of time that you're going to take to study, make sure that every 20 to 30 minutes, you're getting up, you're stretching, you're moving around, you're doing something that's for you. Whether it's, I always say avoid social media, because anytime you go on social media, it doesn't last 10 minutes, but it always lasts longer than that. But do something for you, whether it's go for a walk or make yourself some food, just getting yourself your head out of that book for 10 minutes and let your head recharge. Because anytime that you're studying past that 30 minute break, you're starting to lose retention. And so in other words, you're essentially wasting your time studying past that time of 30 minutes because you're not going to retain any information that you're pulling in from that point without recharging your brain. So I always say, stop studying for so long, take those breaks, be very strict with yourself in those breaks and making sure that you're stepping up, you're stepping away every 20 to 30 minutes, recharge your head for 10 minutes. That way you can come back and you're not wasting any of that time, losing retention. And I think that's a really big thing that students struggle with. And when you're losing focus on time, just set an alarm. Set an alarm for every 25 minutes, set an alarm for every 30 minutes. So that way you don't have to worry about how long I've been studying for. You're just going to let your phone do that for you. And that way, you know, you're going to get your breaks when you need them and you're making your time a lot more valuable to you while you're studying. And the third thing I always make sure that students struggle with too, is because there's a shift in mentality of with a lot of instructors is that I need you to, or at least when it was, what we're seeing with students is that a lot of instructors are going, I need you to read from page 301 to 318 and make sure you know everything inside those pages. And a lot of students take that as, oh, I need to read from those 17 pages, no problem. And so they read it and like, okay, I read it, good, no problem. But they don't actually dig into understanding what was actually happening in those 17 pages. So let's take an inferior MI for an example. If you read 3 pages or 4 pages about inferior MIs, and that's your goal of just reading about it, that's not nearly as effective as, okay, I, instead of reading three or four pages, I'm going to actually understand inferior MRIs. And so, yeah, go ahead and read those three or four pages, but don't stop there. Because if you stop there and just ask yourself, do I actually understand it from reading it from those three or four pages? And the answer is no. Then it's up to you to reach out of that textbook, go find other sources, whether it's Master Medics or Life in a Fast Lane or all these other sources that you can find that, depending on how you learn and what you learn best from, find the source that you can benefit from and use that to really understand it. And don't move on from that topic until you do. And you'll find that you will progress your understanding and your knowledge of medicine far better and far much faster ultimately, because you're actually being really diligent with your time and diligent with your understanding of things, and not just committing to, I need to finish these pages. It's, I need to actually understand this pathophysiology. And if you ask that question more often, you will recognize, you'll say it no quite a bit, and then your immediate response should go, okay, let's find a source that's going to help me understand it more.
That's really interesting. I really love that, going outside of your textbook, going outside of what exactly your school provides or your university provides, has been really important. When you mentioned Master Your Medics, it was interesting. Only before starting this podcast, I'll say this to our listeners, I was trying to understand the ins and outs of glycerol trinitrate or GTN over here in Australia, and the video popped up, and it was only a 5-minute video, and you used visuals and just made it make sense and how it worked. And I was like, ah, that makes so much sense. I don't have to worry about it that much anymore. I actually know what happened. So I really like that, extending out of what you've been prescribed and doing what works for you builds that understanding. So instead of now having to memorize how GTN works, I could see how it works in my head based on the visuals that were provided. There was actually a really important point as well when you were talking about, you know, really making a study schedule, having breaks, and like learning sort of an understanding, say, one topic or one medication at a time, and understanding how it works. And for our listeners, they know that we've talked about Tammy Bullard's book, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly Student Paramedic Handbook. And chapter 9 in there goes all into that and how to create infographics for, you know, trying to understand how different medications work and creating a log and trying to build on that each time. So instead of each time trying to go, hang on, what did I learn that time? You're studying smarter, not harder, because you have that bank and you're just adding to it each time. So I thought that was a really good point that you brought up, Jeff. But just whilst we're here and you're talking about Master Your Medics, do you want to explain a little bit about that and what you do?
Sure. So Master Medics is an online education source specifically for paramedics and EMTs in the United States. And what we do is kind of take that knowledge that's in those textbooks and create a more visual understanding of it. And textbooks are great. I learn really well from textbooks. I'm kind of one of those people. But I know that I'm kind of an exception in one of those kind of things. And a lot of students are extremely visual. They need to see how things work as opposed to reading how things work. And I already do that kind of in my head, where I'm drawing things out in my head. I'm drawing things out in my notes. In fact, when I prepare for a class with Master Medics, I write very few words, and I write all diagrams all over my notebook, because my mind already goes there. And so what I'm trying to do with Master Medics is kind of prompt that knowledge base, or prompt that learning style, whereas textbooks are a great foundational source for you to learn what you need to learn. But if you're a visual person, which most of us are, and what you're doing when you're reading a textbook is that you're reading the textbook and then you are actually interpreting what your textbook says and trying to put it in a visual form in your head already. And what we're trying to do with Master Medics is kind of bridge that gap, where you no longer have to try and interpret what your textbook is saying and show you what the medicine is actually all about. And that's what we've done, is just created a very visual source specifically for paramedics and EMTs that allows you to, like you said, even with that nitro video to just understand it, as opposed to trying to interpret something from a textbook, which can be very challenging at times when your mind just doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. And like I said, I really enjoyed that video and that stuck with me. And so when you reached out, I was like, oh, this is great. I've already heard about you guys and what you do. So that was really interesting. And just sort of taking it there, can be for any paramedic?
No, we work with paramedics all over the world. And so we have a lot of students in Canada, where I'm from. Most of our instructors from the US and Canada. And then we work with students in Ireland, the UK, United Arab Emirates. We work with students in New Zealand, Australia. We work with them all over the world. And the reason that we're able to do that is because the pathophysiology that we're teaching and the classes of drugs, they don't change much regardless of where you work. The names of things sometimes can change, but the way they work in the body and how the body works in general doesn't change regardless of where you are. And so that's why we're able to work with students all over the world. And we actually work with several schools and student societies in Australia as well, that also have memberships to Master Medics and partnerships with those schools to get our content. And they find it very, very relevant with their students, even though we may be originated from Canada. Australian students are using us every day.
That's awesome. Well, for our listeners anyway, to jump on that, we'll pop all the links in our show notes as well. But I just wanted to go into, so just before we sort of go into the final few questions that we ask every paramedic that we come across on here, what's your summary about the most important sort of pharmacology aspects that are important for paramedics?
I'd say the most important thing to understand about pharmacology is, I really want to kind of take what you were saying and say, like, understanding the risk benefits of those things. And the way that you understand and can interpret the risk benefits of each individual drug is knowing the mechanism of those drugs and how that those side effects are going to affect them. So I think that's the most important pharmacological thing that we should know, is the mechanism, so that way we can interpret the risk benefits of each drug that we use.
Awesome. We'll go into the final three questions that we ask every paramedic that comes on here. And just to give our listeners a bit of consistency in those questions, to find a bit of the diversity in the answers. So the first one is, and it doesn't have to be related to just pharmacology, it can be anything. So what is one piece of advice that you'd give to a student?
One piece of advice I give to a student. I think that we all get into paramedicine to live for those big calls and those really challenging, in our mind, fun calls. And I think one of the pieces of advice that I like to give students is to embrace the easy calls too, and embrace the kind of the human nature side of those calls, and really enjoy people. And because we get into this to help people, and the majority of the calls that we get involved with have nothing to do with all the bloods and the guts and the craziness. A lot of what we do is about just being there for those people and enjoying that you can impact them in amazing ways that way. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I like to teach students, is that you're going to impact these people in those big calls, but you're going to make massive impacts, or you can make massive impacts in the people that you don't even give a medication to. You just simply talk to them and be there for them. And that can be a huge difference to those people's lives.
I really love that one. That's actually quite a common sort of concept that's brought about a lot by the different guests we have on here. So I really like that one. What is your biggest mistake that's resulted in your greatest learning?
Poor. Well, I've been in EMS for almost 14 years actually. So I've made enough mistakes. And so my biggest mistakes that I've made, you know what? I think the biggest mistake that I had early on is that I'm actually a fairly, surprisingly, considering what Master Medics is now, I'm a fairly reserved, kind of quiet person in general. And so one thing that I struggled with early on in my career was communication and speaking up when I felt uncomfortable or something didn't feel right. And so I think that was the biggest mistake that I made, is that there were certain situations that I put myself in where I had a weird feeling and I didn't voice those concerns or communicate those concerns. And it ultimately ended up with poor outcomes with a few patients. And so I think that was probably my biggest learning thing that I've had, is that I need to be a lot more assertive and confident with my communication and speaking up. Even though I might be the junior guy on the crew, I still have value that I need to express. And so I think that was my biggest mistake that I've had through my career, is not communicating properly, especially early in my career, and something I've really learned to do more of. And it's made a big impact on my patients later on my career.
That's really interesting. I really love that one. Thank you for sharing that. And the last one is, what did you used to believe to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
I guess one of the best, one thing that comes to mind is that I used to think that I could do this job on 2-3 hours of sleep, and I no longer feel that that's possible. That's for sure. I think I'm trying to think back about those situations. And I really think that the things that I got into this career thinking, or kind of have an idea, is that I was kind of going back to the first question that you had, was I thought that this job was going to be a lot more of, you know, treating things and craziness all the time, trying to throw drugs in people. And I think one of those things that I always thought was true is that every one of those sick patients was seconds from dying, and I was the stopper of that clock. And I think later, as I've gotten into my career, later into my career, I feel like that, where I thought that I had to rush everything all the time because I always thought that I was trying to stop that clock early in my career, I recognize that that wasn't the case later on my career, that there is, you have more time. You don't need to rush all over the place in order to do a good job. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I always thought, is that paramedics were just running everywhere and had to stop that clock. And the reality is that we do most of our things in a lot more cool, calm motion that as we get further in the career.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing those. I'm sure every student will, or anyone listening to this, will definitely take on board what you've said. So thank you so much for coming on. Is there, so that students can find out a bit more about you and what you do and a bit about Master Year Medics, where can they find you?
Sure. Yeah, they can find us in pretty much any social channel, Facebook, Master Your Medics, or Instagram, if that's your poison, Master Your Medics there as well. Or you can go on to our website, mastermedics.com. There's a lot of places to find us. If you're interested in what we do, we do medical questions almost every day on our Instagram that you can comment and jump on. And we actually give away prizes to people that engage with those. And so if you're looking to maybe win some prizes, but also get 5 minutes of knowledge every day kind of idea, we do those on our Instagram page. And we have a lot of fun with those, and you guys can really benefit from them as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And just for our listeners as well, am I correct in saying that you're coming to the Paramedic Education Australia conference via Zoom, of course?
Yes, I'm coming virtually to work on a panel to discuss educational topics with those people as one of their expert panelists.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you there, and hopefully all of our students that have been listening have gotten their ticket and will come as well to learn a bit more about you and what your teachings as well. So thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.